Okay, Douglas, let's get into this. Why did those bombs, those people were clever. Why did, were they not able to deliver one somewhere close enough to get our attention?
Because they were clever. I'll give you an example with Emperor Hirohito, and then I'll talk about Hitler's side of the story. In terms of Emperor Hirohito's case, he had an enormous amount of wealth because he got, like a pope, in charge of a church, a kind of a tithe, about 10% of all of the major industrial or even mom-and-pop corner store incomes in Japan. And combine that with his years over Asia as essentially a conqueror, and he had basically gotten a lot of national treasuries and their gold shipped back to Japan under his command. And as a result, at the end of the war, in 1945, World War II dollars, he had $100 billion in Swiss bank accounts. He was the richest man on earth. And as a result, because the American dollar was essentially the fiat currency of the world ever since Roosevelt, and it was Roosevelt, not Nixon, who took America off the gold standard. He had to, because that's how he printed us out of the Depression. He began to print American dollars without being weighted down by a standard, and as a result, everybody started trading in American dollars worldwide. That was one reason that Japan, which was heavily tied to gold, became bankrupt. And later on, the Americans and the British and the Chinese and the Dutch East Indies surrounded Japan in what was known as an ABCD encirclement. So it was all about trade. What did Japan need? It needed trade with the European-dominated world. That's one of the reasons why they tried to get such an investment in Jewish capital into Asia. That was their connection intelligence-wise. In terms of business, the Americans considered the Japanese Judaic co-prosperity challenge one of the biggest threats that had ever existed. And that's one of the reasons why Roosevelt gave the order for the Flying Tigers to attack and bomb Japan that ultimately led to Pearl Harbor. And as a result, Hirohito knew if he launched his biological weapons, if he launched his nuclear weapons, if he destroyed America as an economy, he would be left like Vietnam, victorious and dirt poor. And throughout America's history, there's this myth that, oh, we go to war with people, we rebuild their economies, and they wind up rich. That only happened in one case, Germany and Japan. The Axis essentially got rebuilt and reconstructed because of their demands after the war. But in every other case, whether it's Vietnam, Angola, Panama, any place America has a war with, they usually wind up Cambodia, dirt poor, forever. And the end result was that Hirohito did not want that happening to his nation. If he destroyed the American dollar and its viability, his $100 billion in Swiss bank accounts becomes confetti. So he forced the Americans into negotiation, into opening their markets, and he wound up leading his people into what was a golden age. They gained more in quality of life by that than they ever dreamed of gaining militarily. That was the whole point of nuclear deterrence. And for him, it worked. And if people doubt this, they only need to check up the salvage histories of American World War II aircraft carriers. They'll find out the vast majority of American World War II aircraft carriers with illustrious battle histories were surrendered to Japan after the war, specifically so the Japanese could turn them into Toyotas. If you're driving a Toyota made in the 1970s, it's made out of an American World War II aircraft carrier.
And you know this.
Oh, that anyone can find that out. Anyone can confirm that. Yeah, that's a fact. Not only that, people always talk about, well, after the war, the Japanese forswore the use of war forever in their constitution. Meanwhile, they've got the second largest navy in the world after the United States, and they have aircraft carriers, and they're listed as super destroyers. They're more like helicopter carriers, but they're much more fit for modern warfare.
And absolutely.
And in terms of the Americans, people never seem to realize, gee, after the war, the Americans were forced to dismantle the Department of War completely and instead come up with the Department of Defense, just like the Japanese had Japanese self-defense forces. You know, everybody went through this quid pro quo where they're basically supporting each other with this kind of demobilization and talk-down process. And it was demoralizing, went on for years through the Truman administration. The fact that he was willing to deal with the Japanese made the military-industrial complex hate him. Just 2 weeks before his election, around 1948 or 50, I believe, a Puerto Rican hit squad. They were claimed to be Puerto Rican nationalists, but they hit Blair House. They killed a policeman and a security guard, and the only reason the 33rd president of the United States didn't die was because his car broke down and he was about 20 minutes late getting home. And that was when he wasn't living at the White House. It was top secret he was living at the Blair House because the White House was undergoing renovation. Somebody on the inside gave this hit squad intelligence. They operated like a military unit, and the idea of them being Puerto Rican nationalists is absurd because, as far as I remember, Puerto Rico was never a state of the United States.
What about the German bombs?
The German bomb went off in October 1944 at Courland, spelled C-O-U-R-L-A-N-D, known as Courland in German. And the Baltic nations, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, had been colonized by the Teutonic Knights for hundreds of years. Hitler considered them a Germanic people. And in October of 1944, with the advancing Soviets, he organized the largest evacuation of civilians ever to occur in human history, known as Operation Hannibal. And people can look that up.
Go slow on this because this is heavy duty.
Sure. Operation Hannibal was orchestrated by the Gross Admiral of the Kriegsmarine U-boat arm. His name was Gross Admiral Karl Dönitz, and they evacuated literally tens of thousands of Germans out of Estonia. And the Soviets were advancing. The only way to stop them was an atomic bomb. That's why a cruise missile on the Isle of Riga near the V-2 rocket island fired an atomic warhead that stopped the Soviets cold. A mushroom cloud that was a full kilometer in diameter with continuous internalization of combustion led to electrical interference with instruments all the way back in London. Great Britain put all constables, fire departments, and medical evacuation teams within the civil defense infrastructure on atomic alert, and that's why the U.S. troops had to hit the D-Day beaches with Geiger counters. And an SS general, Jakob Sporenborg, in a Polish war crimes affidavit, admitted to having given the order to launch that that cruise missile V-2, it was a larger rocket. I don't believe it was a V-2. But
you're speeding. You're speeding. Slow down.
Sorry. And sorry about that. But,
no, brother, you got me doing it too.
Yeah, but my point is that the American reconnaissance pilots had spotted the mushroom cloud, and what people can confirm for themselves is they can look at World War II maps of the Third Reich, and they can see that the northern tip of Estonia on the Baltic littoral was held by the Third Reich all the way up until after Berlin had fallen. The German forces held that right to the end, again, because the bomb had stopped the Soviets cold. So these bombs were used operationally by the Axis. The Axis viewed them as the Axis produced uranium bombs. They used them operationally, and they used them for military purposes. Now, Adolf Hitler's Nazi ideology prevented him from using them militarily again on the continent of Europe. When it was found by the deployment of that nuclear weapon, that radiation unleashed by it was not stopped by the American human immune system. And the Americans knew of it too, because when General Groves and Oppenheimer blew the Trinity bomb, everyone was wearing rubber booties. They knew that radiation would absorb through their feet if they weren't wearing this kind of at least minor protection. And so the Americans knew about the dangers of radiation on the cellular level. When the Germans found out about it, Adolf Hitler felt that another deployment of that weapon would do long-term genetic damage to Aryan Man. So he gave the order they never be deployed on the continent of Europe again. Erwin Rommel of the Afrika Korps was put in charge of the Normandy beaches for defense. And in the movie The Longest Day, an actual quote by the actor from Rommel is stated, where the actor is pointing at that beach and saying, "Not one single Allied soldier will make it alive to that beach." Now, only a madman could make a claim like that unless he was considering the use of atomic weapons. And in the documents that I worked with, he was. He wanted to use Germany's atomic weapons to turn the Normandy beaches into glass. And Adolf Hitler said, "No, we're not going to use them on Europe." And Rommel said, as a military man, he couldn't abide without using the new technology. So Hitler had him commit suicide. He ordered him to kill himself rather than tolerate his disobedience and the deployment of such weapons on the continent of Europe. And so that was the story behind the repression of that technology due to Nazi biologically motivated ideology. So this is why they were used in very regional areas by the Axis, and in a nuclear deterrent sense by Japan. And I hope that that explains it to people as to the reality of the situation. We were entering a new age, an age of Cold War.